live from our national studios here in Accra and on the internet, and also linking up with all our regional FM stations. We say welcome to Behind the News, where we link up with the newsmakers and the experts. My name is Kingsley Obinchere. For tonight, Agro residents welcome government ultimatum to Fulani herdsmen to leave the area, but warns that they should not be settled anywhere near Agolans. What happens next? Minister of Trade and Industry calls the bluff of British government's aid threat cut. As the 2012 election gets closer, some youth affiliated to CPP presidential aspirant Dr. Park Wesindum adopts innovative campaign to recruit volunteers. And the question is that enough to get CPP the vote? And how far have we paid attention to youth concerns as Africa Youth Day is celebrated? As usual, we'll be encouraging you to be active listeners by sending in your text to 026-441-8767. 026-441-8767. And we move on to our first story. The tension between the Fulani herdsmen and the people of Ago in the Asante Achim North municipality continues as the government tries its possible best to resolve the conflict. There has been heightened tension between the Fulani herdsmen and the Ago community following what the community describes as the antisocial activities and heinous crimes committed against the indigenes. Two inhabitants are alleged to have been shot by the Fulani herdsmen recently. In a bid to calm tension, the government has given the herdsmen 2 weeks to leave the area. However, much as the people appreciate the government's moves to resolve the crisis, they have also expressed their determination to resist any attempt to relocate the herdsmen on any land belonging to the Ago community. Kingsley Obin is a community leader at Ago, and he has joined us on the line. Good evening, sir, and welcome once again to Behind the News.
Good evening.
Yes. Can you say you are satisfied with the government's effort to drive the Fulani herdsmen from Ago?
Anyway, we are satisfied with that effort.
Yes,
we
but...
are satisfied with the effort of driving away the Fulani herdsmen from our land.
Yes, but... you are still issuing a threat, even though you are talking about satisfaction.
Yes. The threat is that there's no land in Agogo which will be given to the Fulani herdsmen. We've occupied the whole land. The land belongs to indigenous, individual people over here. It's not for the government, or it's not for the mining, as is being alleged. So, if by this I know they have to send the land in question, the map to the Lands Commission, whereby it will be pasted in all these vantage points in Agogo. And if there's no challenge between this thing, if there arise that there's no challenge, I think the land must be given to the full administration. But right now, the whole place is occupied. The people are owning the land. It's not for anybody. So there's no need relocating them at any place. The place they gave to them, they have occupied it and they have abused it. And while they are abusing the people here, you see, they have now become enemies to the Agogo, the citizens. So I don't think if we see a Fulani herdsman here, any woman who sees a Fulani herdsman begins to run away. So I don't see the reason why they have to relocate them near Agogo, any place in Agogo land. So we are not pleased with this, placing them to another place. We are not pleased with it.
Can you then say that from what you are saying, you don't have anyone in Ago having cattle at all, that perhaps these Fulani herdsmen might be tending them in that person's place?
Pardon?
I'm asking, perhaps some residents of Ago also own some cattle. If the Fulani herdsmen are in charge, are you saying that they should leave?
Oh no, for those Fulani herdsmen who are in charge of the Agogo citizens, we know them. They stay at Agogo here, so they used to go to where they feed and come back. They go all the time and come back. We know them. And they are not harmful as these Fulani from Niger and all this. They are not harmful as those Fulani men. So we know them. We can stay with them.
So assuming they extend an olive branch to you and say that for us, they also appreciate the seriousness of the situation, but will also try to hem their people in and let them do the right things. Are you prepared to cede some ground?
If they knew this and they have abused or this in what is given to them, so there's no turning back. they have to go. They have abused what was given to them.
Yeah. So we are still asking that question. People are talking about the peace in the long run and for the people of Ago to also have a semblance of that peace. Assuming that you also try to link up with them, what do you think will happen? Are you still making that effort?
See, one thing is, those Fulani people, I think you don't know them. See, one of them told me the other day that he was born and bred in the bush. He has stayed with animals at the bush for more than 20 years. So he doesn't know where to stay in this thing, either a village or a city. They stay in bush. So there's no need coming in good terms with the people of Agogo. How can such a person come in good terms with the person in Agogo? Oh, there's no need. We shouldn't try such things. They will abuse it. So how you have seen them, the people are scared of them. So they must leave the land for us.
Yeah. So what do you expect after the ultimatum?
Pardon?
What do you expect after the ultimatum? Yes.
Oh, you see, if they don't go, it means they abuse their government's order. And the government has to force them to leave. If that thing fails, the people of Agogo are prepared to face them squarely.
Yeah. Secondly, Abin, we'll please ask you to hold on for a moment as we also welcome on the line the municipal chief executive for Ago. That is the area, Asante Achim North, Thomas Osei Bunsu. He's on the line with us. Good evening, sir. Hello, Mr. Osei Bunsu.
Hello.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Well, you've heard your resident talking about the fact that they are not prepared to yield any grounds at all. What are you doing after the ultimatum?
Ultimatum of what?
For the Fulani herdsmen to vacate Ago.
Yeah, they have to vacate. But there are some negotiations which, for peace to prevail, they have to be evacuated or evicted from the place. As there has been a previous agreement as to where the Jasihene will lead them far, far away to a distant area within the place, that they will not come nearer to this area where the farmers have been working to maintain peace and order. I think it is something we have to consider and see how best to do that, because it's not only those who have registered with Nana that stay there. There are some others who come from neighboring countries, but they are very hostile, and they also cause a lot of atrocities to the people. So if they are moving them away, it is something which is very dicey. We have to have a comprehensive study and policy about it. So once they are making recce, I believe citizens and all of us should exercise patience, because the military have come there from this time onwards to make recce and see to evict all those foreign nomadics first, and then this one too. You have to drive them out of that place into a new settlement, which it must be conclusively, and with stakeholders meeting together, we do that. I think initially this will solve the problem, but this is a short-term solution to the problem. We have a long-term solution where the government is having and duly working on it to see, to address it holistically and see how best all affected areas, these people could be driven out.
Yes, we understand you are in Accra presently. What was the situation when you were leaving?
I had a meeting with the national security, but at the meeting, really, what transpired is boils down to security matters, which I don't have to, because it is a plan we have to apply to evict. So it is something we should not be thrown into public discussion.
Yeah, but some of the young people in the area are also threatening that they don't want them anywhere near. How are you engaging them so that no matter what happens, they will still be pursuing the peace?
They don't want them where? Near.
Anywhere near go.
Yeah. When you talk of the plains, it's very, very vast. And it links up to even where the one area, see, and so it's very, very vast, and that area to our land extends with that place. So wherever is very far, and the peace will prevail, we have to initially execute that and see how best things could be done.
Yeah. So do you agree with those who are saying that perhaps the assembly has delayed in taking action since residents started talking
delayed
about...
Delayed in what sense?
That is what some are saying, because the residents started asking for some action some time ago.
Action? Look, if you know what efforts the assembly had done up to this stage, you could have really commended us. You get it? So it's unfortunate people are saying that assembly delayed. Initially, something that took place between the traditional people and these people without the knowledge of the assembly. But when it came, it's the assembly that has been put on our toes, suffering here and there, expanding here and there, and you say assembly has done nothing. It's unfortunate to hear this.
So you see it as an issue of communication?
Pardon me?
You see it as an issue of communication? Is that it?
Issue of communication.
Between the assembly and the residents?
No, communication has been going on. But the point is, you see, when you look at it, the stakeholders are of three divisions. That is, the owners of the cattle, who do not stay there and stay in the big cities and in various parts of the country, as one, then the herdsmen themselves, do you see it, who are causing the trouble, then the traditional group, then the concerned citizens, and then the assembly, you see. And so it is a matter of all these groups coming together. And when we came together for a series of meetings, it was there that because of uncompromising nature, the matter had to be transferred to the Regional Security Council. You get me right? So when it got there too, we did not stop. We followed up, we had a series of meetings here and there until lastly the RESEC had to take a decision to bring forces to maintain peace and order.
Okay.
You get me right. So if somebody says the assembly has done nothing or has delayed, then it's unfortunate.
Okay. Mr. Sebuns, we'll hold you on for just a moment as we go to Mr. Kingsley Obin, who has been very active in this campaign to get out the Fulani herdsmen. Mr. Obin, listening to your MCE, it appears something was being done, but perhaps you didn't see it so much.
Oh, in a way, the assembly has tried a lot. We've had so many meetings with the assembly, and it has proved fruitful. It has proved everything fruitful. So we appreciate what the effort the assembly has been making towards this. It is through the assembly whereby these Fulani people were ordered to become for some time until this moment. Other than that, they might have killed so many people over here. And so right now, once they know that they are going away, they want to kill anybody whom at all they come across. So the assembly, in fact, has done a lot for Agogo. If not because of the assembly, I don't think I will be in such a situation. So,
okay. So yeah. Are you going to lift the ban on social gatherings? For example, the funerals you said no one should go through with?
Please, you see, the ultimatum is this. We said unless the Fulani herdsmen move away from Agogo, there will be no funeral. You see, yesterday like this, two people were shot. They nearly killed two of our citizens. So we shan't perform funerals while they'll be killing us. We have to let them go, see that they are gone before we celebrate our funerals. So for that, let's put that in our side and see how we can drive away the Fulani herdsmen.
Okay. Second Sleobi, I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight on Behind the News.
Thank you.
Second Sleobi is a community leader at AGO. But Ms. Osebunsu, just before we dismiss you, you've heard the active resident talking about the issues. Even after this one, how will you still be engaging them to know that the assembly is still seeking their interest?
Pardon me.
We are asking, how will you still be engaging the residents of AGO to know that you are still seeking their interest?
As the representative of the president, I have to see to it that peace prevails, sanity prevails, and there must be order there. So when I return from Accra, I will have a consultative meeting with stakeholders and see how best we can solve the problem once and for all, once forces are there to evict them.
Okay.
So really, I believe with the stakeholders meeting, peace and order will come to the municipality.
We want to thank you very much for joining us tonight, Mr. Thomas Osebunsu. As the municipal chief executive of the Asante Achim North District. And we have joining us on the line now, Emmanuel Bombandi, the Executive Director of the West African Network for Peace Building. Waneb, good evening, sir.
Yeah, hello, good evening.
Yes, this is where we've got to with this particular issue. Do you think the right step has been taken now in giving the ultimatum to move the Fulani herdsmen out?
First of all, when I joined your discussion, I heard the tail end of what the Municipal Chief Executive was saying, and that is the way I want to go. I am not sure he was referring to an ultimatum, but let me clarify very clearly that from my perspective and working particularly in this area this year across West Africa, the ultimatums and the way they are put forward does not help to be able to transform and take forward the way we want peace in areas that we have herdsmen or pastoralists in conflict with agriculturists. So, straightforward, I heard about a consultative meeting. I would advocate the type of dialogue that brings all the key stakeholders and absolutely the municipal chief executive and the assembly should take the lead with the traditional rulers supported by central government. And what is the purpose of this dialogue? It is to be able to hold the herdsmen accountable to a new behavior, a new conduct, and the way to do this is to negotiate with them what you would describe as the corridors for grazing their animals that is allowed and permitted by the municipal assembly. Once that is done, what dialogue also would help us to be able to achieve an objective of peaceful coexistence is for them to respect this ultimatum, not in terms of the enforcement of peace by driving them out, but by leveling up with them to be able to appreciate that they cannot trespass on farmlands. And the monitoring, therefore, of the security agencies is to ensure that the agreements that they reached and the corridors for grazing, they do not come out of those corridors and trespass on farming lands. When you are able to achieve this, what happens is that people hold themselves accountable because they feel that they had a space to participate in dialogue and to come to a mutual understanding and a solution. But if the way forward is an ultimatum, you risk creating an environment in which herdsmen think that they are ostracized, they are excluded, they are marginalized. The behavior and conduct begins to be one that is radicalized. And you now have to perpetually maintain the presence of our armed forces to control their behavior and conduct, which cannot even be foolproof, because they will hide in the bushes and they will continue to commit violent crime and they will continue to do the type of things that we do not like. So for me, to conclude here, it's not about an ultimatum, but it's about the mutual accountability through dialogue that makes the herdsmen to appreciate that they must stop what they are doing, and they must stop it precisely because nobody is excluding them, but the municipal assembly is holding them accountable to a new behavior and a new conduct for peaceful coexistence.
Yeah, but we have been made to understand that the attempt to bring them to the table has been very difficult.
I think it is a process. To bring them to the table, you must identify. That's why I started by talking about the critical key stakeholders. So it's not just about the herdsmen in Agogo area. You must also look for their leadership beyond that area. And you know that the majority of the herdsmen belong to the Fulani ethnic groups, and they are a well-organized community. They have leaders. We sent the Fulani chief and some of the Fulani elders to Ouagadougou in February for a regional conference. We're able to identify them, and they can exert their influence to bear on these herdsmen in this particular area of our country that we are talking about.
So do people have the wrong notion about them? Because any time we hear about Fulani herdsmen or Fulani men, it's related to something quite negative.
Exactly. And we have done that repeatedly, and we have succeeded in creating a social conflict, and we have ethnicized. You see, what we have succeeded in doing is that we have ethnicized what is just the conflict around pastoralists and agriculturists. The only thing is that in Ghana, the overwhelming majority of pastoralists are Fulanese. But it is the activity that we should criminalize and not the people. Because when you, there is a book that is translated in all the languages of the world called Getting to Yes. When you are dealing with conflict, what you do is you separate the people from the problem. You do not make the Fulani the problem, but you look at the problem, which is their trespassing on agricultural lands, and engage them to deal with that. So for me, today, for example, I must confess that I was happy when I saw the headline of the Ghanaian Times. It said, herdsmen. For the first time, I saw a newspaper refer to them as herdsmen and not Fulani. And that's why we have a collective responsibility as a people to help change that behavior. But you don't change behavior through force. You change it by letting people reason, persuading them to see how their role can be constructive. And when we are able to do that, we will shift them away from the distraction and the negative behavior that they exhibit that we don't like, and help them to change to the constructive behavior, which is exactly what we want.
Mr. Bombande, I want to thank you very much for your time too this evening.
Thank you so much.
That's the Executive Director of the West African Network for Peace Building. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana and also linking up on the internet at gbcghana.com. And you are live on our regional FM station, Sunrise Radio Kofodia, Ubuntu 96.5 Tema and Volta Star Radio. Who is Behind the News live on Radio Ghana and linking up with Twin City Radio, Radio Central, Cape Coast, and Garden City Radio, Kumasi. And to our next story, Trade and Industry Minister Hannah Tete has called the bluff of the British government's threats to withhold aid from African countries which do not reform legislation banning homosexuality. Interacting with some media personnel in Accra today, Madame Hannah Tete reminded UK Prime Minister David Cameron that Ghana is a sovereign country just like Britain or any other European country. Therefore, internal matters such as this should not engage the attention of outsiders. Meanwhile, the Deputy Minister of Information, Baba Jamal, says Ghana government has not received any correspondence from the British to that effect, and he's joined us on the line presently. Good evening, Baba Jamal.
Good evening.
Well, the question being posed is, sometimes because of the support some governments, not only Ghana, would like to yield to some of these pressure, Do you see anything happening like that?
In the first place, like rightly mentioned, we as a government have not received any official correspondence on this issue. And for that matter, we would treat it as a rumor or maybe as a hearsay by the public. But even if it's true that such statements were made, let me make it clear that Ghana is an independent country with our set of rules, traditions, and values that we will continue to cherish and protect. And this government, under no circumstance, will allow its cultural and traditional values to be diluted just for the sake of aid. So I would like to make it clear that our government believes in the rule of law, believes in Ghana democracy. We believe that every group of people should be allowed to have their own determination in terms of how they want to run their country. And for that matter, we will not allow such threat to determine what we do with our country. We all know that all the major religions in this country, Islam, Christianity, and even African traditional beliefs, all these major religions found on gayism and lesbianism. So it's direct affront to our cultural and religious beliefs. And I don't think that any government, and for that matter, this government led by Professor Moss, who everybody knows where he stands when it comes to religious beliefs, who want to succumb to such threats.
Yes, but some are saying that in Ghana's attempt to stave off threats, the country is also likely to suffer economically. Is there any truth in it?
Oh, we have to all know that there's cost to anything that you do. Definitely Ghana, and for that matter, all third world African countries are moving towards what we call trade partnership and not aid. We all know that aid from the Western country is what is continuously keeping us perpetually where we are as a country in terms of development. So Ghana as a country is starting a new course economically to be self-sustaining. So it is even in our own interest that we are challenged to chart a course that will make us self-dependent. That is not to say that we don't need assistance. We don't need aid from other people. But of course, such aid must not come with heinous conditions like accepting gayism and lesbianism. That surely will be against our cultural beliefs and values, and for that matter, will be an affront to our society.
So, has there been any official position for now, or perhaps you're also waiting to get something official from the British government?
Of course, you cannot give any official position when you have not received any official correspondence. So, like I said earlier, that for now, we are all believing that if those statements are made, of course, that statement cannot force us into doing things that we know will not inure or will inure, will be inimical to the development of our people. For now, I think that Ghanaians are all united against such a pronouncement.
We want to thank you very much for your time this evening, Baba Jamal.
It's a pleasure talking.
That is Deputy Minister of Information. But some of the strongest statements against David Cameron's threats have particularly come from the Christian and Muslim communities. The presiding bishop of the Methodist Church, Most Reverend Professor Emmanuel Asante, is on the line to share his concerns. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Some are saying by that statement, people are trying to infringe on African cultural and Christian sensibilities or perhaps other religions that might frown against the habits. Is this so?
Yes, definitely. Let me first of all say that for me, I find that statement to be very, very, very unfortunate, because one would not expect a prime minister, the prime minister of Britain of all people, to come up with a statement like that. It's, first of all, is blackmailing, you know, trying to tell us to adopt a certain value that is completely against our own values, for A. The second thing is that, for me, I think it is a clear display of lack of respect for us, and also lack of sensitivity to our sensibilities, because we have our own values. We have our religio-cultural values. And you know that in this country, it is not just Christians who are against it. Traditional religion, our own religio-cultural values, are against it. Christianity is against it. The Quran, that is the Muslims, are also against it. You cannot, on the basis of aid that is given to us, force us to go against our values. Now, I know that people talk about human rights, that it is the right of such people to do whatever they want to do. We know that in this country, we have not gone out, you know, trying to persecute people perceived to be doing that. The laws are against that. But the nation has not entered into people's bedrooms. I do not understand why we should come up with a legislation to recognize gayism and lesbianism in this country in order for us to gain somebody's assistance. So, for me, he has touched our sensibility, and I do not expect, you know, a man of his caliber to come up with, you know, a statement like that.
Yeah, the deputy minister was talking about the fact that since there's not been any official communication on it, they cannot respond. But from your community, do you think you can also protest in any way?
We would not want to do anything, you know, that will sort of, at least if official communication hasn't come. All that we would do for the time being is to sound a note of caution to the government. If an official communication should come, the government should stand by what the impression they have given us, that they also stand by the values, the Ghanaian values. We will not sell our birthright for a portage, you know. I mean, these are our values. It is important for us to know that when you talk about development, development is not just economic development. Britain may be economically worse off than we are, technologically more developed than we are, but they are morally bankrupt. We, in some sense, are morally developed. And I think it is important for us to hold on to it, that we do not compromise that. We will not, for the time being, take placards and other things to protest against it, but we will speak against it on any platform that we will have. We will also educate Ghanaians to stand firm. Perhaps this is a wake-up call to Africans that we should stop depending upon the pittance we are receiving from our friends, and on the basis of which they keep on telling us to do things that will please them and not us.
I want to thank you very much for your time too this evening, Most Reverend Professor Emmanuel Asante.
Thank you kindly.
That's the presiding bishop of the Methodist Church of Ghana. But we also have joining us now Sheikh Almiyar Shaibu, an opinion leader in the Muslim community and also a senior imam, Dar es Salaam Mosque, that is the airport residential area. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Some Muslims are even threatening to demonstrate against the British Prime Minister. Have you heard about that?
That has not come to my notice. And I think that demonstration is not necessarily the issue. But what is important is for us to state our position here. For example, a press conference would be okay for us to state clearly the legal position that Islam adopts regarding an ethical and moral underpinnings of the prohibition of gayism and lesbianism. That will be enough to educate people, and then we should go ahead and also educate our people, because you cannot say that our communities are completely devoid of it. It is a growing phenomenon, and once you have your own people getting involved in it, your responsibility will be to engage in consistent and continuous reform kind of program that will reorientate the people and take them away from this kind of bestial kind of sexual orientation, which all well-meaning religious traditions of the world, you know, go against, including Christianity, African traditional religion, Buddhism, and indeed, I mean, all religions that have serious consciousness about ethics and morality and the dignity of the human person go against this.
Yeah.
And I think that we should rather go ahead and state our case either through a press conference, feature articles, educate our youth in the house, and then the adults who sometimes get the youth involved must become people, Muslims, of conscience, that they will not allow themselves to be drawn into this kind of heinous crime.
Yeah. So from what you're saying, you believe your own people, that is talking about the environment here, they have created a laissez-faire situation for whatever is being introduced or being pushed. Is that it?
It's not very clear.
Yes, I'm asking that perhaps you are saying that with the atmosphere that is existing, people are increasingly beginning to accept certain things that previously they wouldn't accept. So is that what is perhaps opening an avenue for others to also start pushing it in strongly?
Oh, yes. You know, there are a lot of influences, there are a lot of factors that are leading to this. It used not to be an issue even for discussion in the Ghanaian public sector. But today, exposure, media exposure, the internet, and so on, is exposing people to so many pornography. Other very quick means of communication are exposing our young people to this kind of practices. And you should not forget that so much a desire for entertainment and for pleasure seeking is one of the moral challenges that confront humanity. And in modern day sense, it is one that is creating so much temptations in the life of people. So these things are a rising phenomenon, and we must accept them as the realities that are surrounding us and take the necessary precautions that, apart from the legal position or the political position, it's a matter of conscience and morality that individuals should be able to fight their own carnal desires and then take themselves and walk on the path of righteousness and moral reform.
So you are thinking about the issue starting from home instead of just blaming...
Exactly, I agree with you. So at the family level, you see, every religious person is a missionary to himself first of all before to others. So at individual levels, if we can reform our individual selves, and then our close immediate family members, how we can give them the correct orientation, they will grow to condemn this kind of act. What do you call it? In Akan, for example, they tell us that Obia Ntre Akwada Yankupon. It is so the child grows with an inner sense, you know, of feeling about God. But it's the environment that works to entrench that kind of consciousness and transform it into a kind of everyday practical life that works, that goes according to the will of God. But let me also add that even as a nation, I am surprised that as a nation we are unable to be bold enough to state our position clearly. If you read the first part of our constitution, the 1992 constitution, it begins with "in the name of God." I am surprised that as a nation we are unable to really show the world that our religion, our constitution, and our nation hinges on a strong principle of belief in God. And with God, everything is possible in our lives. Read our national anthem. We begin by asking God, "God bless our homeland, Ghana." And go and read our national pledge. We end up by saying, "So help me, God." So in all our national symbols, God is at the center. So if God is at the center of our nation, and in our conscience as people, why can't we be courageous to state our position that we abhor this,
the Bible, which is the reference book for Christians who form a dominant segment of our population, the Quran, which also forms the textual reference for Muslims who constitute a significant population of this country. Why can't we jointly, together with our political leaders and the state as a whole, state our position on this? Because okay. The God we worship abhors this, condemns it,
okay.
And he has visited his wrath on a whole nation that we all agree.
Okay.
So for us, it would be a sheer hypocrisy even as a nation.
Okay.
We are unable to state our position clearly.
Sheikh Aimri Aishaibu, we want to thank you very much for your concerns to us expressed here on Behind the News.
Thank you so much.
It involves legal issues, that is talking about homosexuality and the push. Ibrahim Amaliba is with the Legal Resources Center in Accra. He's also on the line with us. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Good evening to your listeners.
Increasingly, the questions are being asked as to what the laws are on homosexuality in Ghana. What are they?
It is important to indicate that the laws of Ghana do not mention homosexuality and lesbianism, but the laws of Ghana specifically talks about unnatural carnal knowledge. And so if you want to look at homosexuality and lesbianism as engaging in unnatural carnal knowledge, then it will fall under that section. But as it is now, the law does not specifically mention homosexuality as well as lesbianism and then proscribes them.
So can you, by extension, yes, talk about unnatural carnal knowledge as homosexuality then?
Exactly. So if you are going to look at homosexuality and you look at the incidence of that act, you realize that it has to do with sexual penetration of another man by a man. And that clearly is unnatural. The natural way is penis through the vagina and not penis through the anus. And so you could safely bring it under the provisions of unnatural carnal knowledge. But then if you have a clever lawyer, you could say that, look, my client did not engage in unnatural carnal knowledge. The law did not mention homosexuality. And then we'll then leave it to the court to interpret. So that is a gray area, and that is where the laws have not been sufficiently addressed.
The concern has been homosexuality all along, but the other one is lesbianism. Are we capturing it in that same way?
You see, we need to differentiate the sexual aspect of lesbianism and homosexuality. You see, apart from the penetration, which is unnatural, we also see that it is driving sexual satisfaction from another man. That is homosexuality. So you could find them fondling each other. You can find them kissing each other. You can find them doing all sort of things. Those are the other aspects that the law has not captured. And so when you find a man and a man kissing, you can't do anything about it because the law does not talk about it. When you find a man and a man holding each other's palms and then caressing each other, you can't do anything. What the law actually talks about, it is the penetration, the sexual act of it. For that one, the law is categorical. You cannot do that. It is not allowed. So, and with lesbianism, you can also look at it from the sexual point of it. If there's penetration, if the two women or ladies are engaged in sexual acts, then again, the law does not allow that. But if it is kissing and all other things, then you cannot say that falls under unnatural carnal knowledge.
So it means that with this case, you can't arrest anyone for practicing homosexuality if you don't have direct evidence.
If you don't have direct evidence, you cannot secure a prosecution. That is why some of us were against the Western Regional Minister when he says that when you see a homosexual, you should arrest him. And you cannot just arrest somebody who is walking about and saying that I'm a homosexual. You must arrest him when he's engaged in the act. It's the act which is prohibited and not the person as I say. And so you cannot arrest somebody simply because you tag him or you describe him as a homosexual. But you can arrest him if he's engaged in the act.
Thank you very much for clarifying that issue for us, Lawyer Abraham Amaliba.
Thank you very much.
He's with the Legal Resources Center. Behind the News, live on Radio BR, Radio Apawes, Yura Radio, and also Radio Savannah. Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. They are considered to be the future of the world, but increasingly, in some countries, young people are proving to be the time bomb left to create devastation. Many concerned development practitioners are calling attention to the fact that lip service to youth concerns will not help anybody's cause. As Ghana joined the rest of the continent to celebrate Africa Youth Day, the question playing on the lips of many is how far the concerns of young people have been addressed. What are the gaps needing serious attention, and how can the concerns be tackled in a bipartisan manner? Joining us on the line is a youth development consultant and advocate, Samuel Kisi, for us to look at the issues. You are welcome, Samuel.
Thank you very much, Kingsley.
For you as a young person, what do you consider to be the progress recorded over the past few years?
Well, I think we have come a long way in terms of youth development, and we need to recognize how far we have come as a people. I think that if you look at just the fact that the whole African Union heads of state chose to focus on young people for their main meeting for this year, which was in June, looking at accelerating youth empowerment for sustainable development. I think that was a big milestone. Now, you realize also that over the last year, the international community declared the International Year of the Youth. And even here on the African front, we are within the decade of youth development. So I think that, you know, the mere importance that is being given to young people's issues, as opposed to the traditional African way of looking at young people's development, saying that, you know, the young person should be seen but not heard. I think that, you know, just opposing these two show that we are coming a long way. I think we can top that by investing more in young people's development. We need to go beyond the rhetoric. We need to go beyond saying that the young people are the future of our country and of our continent.
So do you see investment as the only gap?
I think that we still have some way to go in terms of public understanding of the role that young people have to play in society. But yes, if you ask me, I think investment in education, in quality education, making sure that education that young people are receiving responds to the development needs of the country is extremely important. Making sure that health needs are well taken care of is also extremely important. We have a situation in Southern Africa where there are extremely high rates of HIV prevalence. We have a situation even in our countries where we have prevalence rates of HIV at unacceptable levels. When you talk about sexual and reproductive health, for instance, you have a country where still we have a contraceptive usage rate of around 17%. These are all indicators that we are not doing enough to protect ourselves, are not doing enough to safeguard the health of our people, and particularly of young people. So I think that these are areas that need to be looked at. But since we are talking about this on the occasion of the Africa Youth Day, I think it is also important to even pay attention to what is happening elsewhere in the continent. And I think, you know, young people have an important role to play in terms of maintaining the peace in their countries as agents of change, you know, looking at changing the dynamics in countries in terms of social injustice, poverty and disease, poverty reduction. And even in places where there have been armed conflicts, you realize that young people have been the main drivers of these. They are manipulated in all kinds of ways, but young people are the ones that are used to perpetuate all these ills. So the role that young people have to play in the development or otherwise of any country cannot be overemphasized.
Yeah. So what do you say about the concern that in some cases you find some young people not concerned at all about their own development? They will prefer to be engaged in other things.
Well, I think that, you know, the apathy among some young people with regards to development issues is a real cause for concern. To a large extent, you know, young people seem to be more engaged in entertainment and all of the other things that usually, you know, these are extremely important for the development of young people as well, but that tends to be too much of an obsession, and I think that it's an issue that has to be addressed. Unfortunately, you know, we haven't seen the involvement of young people to the extent that we want. But I think on different fronts, we are seeing some progress. If you take it even from the political aspect, you can see the increasing role that, for instance, youth organizers and young people in different political parties are playing. We have, for instance, a government in power which is, you know, putting a lot of emphasis on the role young people can play as well. So I hope this is the beginning, but
we need to
move away from the mentality that for young people to be interested in anything, we need to add some music and concert and dance before they can be. I think that, you know, our educational system and even our school curriculums can work to this. We need to get back to that place of our founding fathers where every young person grew up thinking about the well-being of the country and thinking about patriotism and what they can do to support their country. Now, if young people have this kind of mentality, it will be hard for them to think that issues of national interest mean nothing to them. So I think this is something that is of extreme importance.
Samuel Kisi, we want to thank you very much on this occasion of Africa Youth Day for talking to us. We want to place it on record that we also made the effort to reach the National Youth Authority Coordinator. But as we speak, we are not able to get through to him. But it's mentioned something that is very important. Politicians also bringing young people into it. But are we tackling it on a bipartisan basis? Well, joining us on the line is Richard Ni Ama Nkunim. They are concerned about really getting their party in power. Are they also concerned about youth development? Richard, you are welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
What is your concern about young people's development, especially as you are also fighting strongly for your party? Should it be a party level or perhaps anywhere you have to push the agenda?
I think the development of young people is very essential to the development of our nation. I think my brother, whom you were interviewing, were mentioning the fact that most young people show apathy, especially towards leadership and other issues that are of concern to them. I can't disagree with him. I think that is true. And what we need to do is to make sure that these young people are given guided mentorship in order to help them make the right decisions and pick the right choices that will help them get development for themselves, for their society, and for the country.
Yeah. So, in your case, let's come to a particular thing you are involved in now, campaigning especially for Dr. Kwesi Ndum. Do you think that is the way to go, especially at a time when others are also competing for the same slot?
Yes, I don't think we are in out of gear at all. Unfortunately, our constitution prevents a sizable number of... No, it totally prevents the youth from contesting for position of president, because the constitution makes it clear that you need to attain the age of 40 and above before you can contest for the position of president. But that notwithstanding, I still think the youth has a play to have a role to play in our presidential campaigns, just like we are doing now. You know, the 2010 population census tells us that the youth forms the majority of Ghanaians. And so for anybody to be able to collect power by hanging on the majority of the people, then that person must be able to appeal to the youth who are the majority in the society. And that is how come Dr. Papa Kwesi Ndum is trying all what he can do to make sure he's reaching out to the youth. As we speak today, he has over 60,000 fans on Facebook and Twitter. And these people, he's been interacting with them on daily basis, giving them information, sharing resourceful sites to them where they can find educational materials to read, giving them advice and counsel. Out of these, most of these young people who have realized the hope that Dr. Ndum is presenting have said that they want to be volunteers for him come 2012. And that is how come we are going about training these people so that they will understand exactly what the CPP is standing for and what Dr. Papa Kwesi Ndum is also standing for.
Richard, now, because of our time, you know, we'll be exploring this, that is the youth in politics and exactly how they can also promote that young people's agenda. But for now, we have to leave it and want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Richard Ni Ama Nkunim is the National Campaign Coordinator of a group that is thinking of Dr. Ndum for presidential candidate of the CPP and president too. We have some of your tests before we go. Hamid Tabiesi is saying our leaders must be careful with the West or else God is going to punish us. And this one from Sadiq Asum Achim. The Fulani herdsmen must be forced to refrain from their bad behavior, else wherever they go, the situation will still be the same. So please, I hope it is about time they change their behavior or leave our country for us peacefully. And that is where time will permit us to come to. I want to thank you all for being there. Our technical crew made up of Nina Isua and production crew Christopher Sidu, Bright Agama, Edmund Tete, and Ibrahim Asari. My name is Kingsley Obinchere.